time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 606 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I talk with Matt Groom from Inferno Girl Red, which has a Kickstarter going on until Thursday, September 21st. Matt talks about Inferno Girl Red books 1 and 2, which are described this way. Inferno Girl Red combines the high school superheroic drama of Into the Spider-Verse with the dynamic storytelling and world-building of Japanese tokusatsu superheroes, and the intriguing relationship drama of British boarding school fiction. We discuss what made this intriguing book happen, who the characters are, and what else Matt is working on. Again, this project will be funded if it reaches its goal by Thursday, September 21, so be sure to support it once you listen to this fun interview. There's a lot to get to this week, so let's get on with the show. Inferno Girl Red combines the high school superheroic drama of Into the Spider-Verse with the dynamic storytelling and world-building of Japanese tokusatsu superheroes and the intrigue and relationship drama of British boarding school fiction. And today I'm talking with writer Matt Groom, co-creator of Inferno Girl Red. How you doing, Matt?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me on, Wayne.
It's good to talk with you. Right now, the reason why we're talking to Chris at this point, right now on Kickstarter is the crowdfunding for, and I'll read the whole thing, it's Inferno Girl Red Books 1 and 2 by Matt Groom and Erica Durso. The hit graphic novel series continues with more superhero drama, teen angst, and I don't know why this always gets me. Tokusatsu action. That's someday I'll be able to pronounce that exactly right. Yeah, I get that right. So, Matt, let's see. You guys had a successful one for the first one, and now we're into the second one. Let's see. Your previous work includes Ultraman from Marvel Comics. I think you've worked with your editor, Kyle Higgins, before. And what was your first book called?
Self-Made from Image Comics.
Because it was Image. So it's not a surprise then that Inferno Girl Red came out after the Kickstarter was done. The issues came out individually through Image.
That's right. And
so that's good. So talk with me, because there's a relationship with Radiant Black. And, of course, Radiant Black, they came out with a video, like a music video for Radiant Black. And, of course, the colorist, Igor Monti, is also on the Radiant Black team. So talk about what the relationship is. This is part of what they call the Massive Verse?
That's exactly right. So when Kyle was developing Radiant Black in its early stages, I was also developing Inferno Girl Red, and a mutual friend of ours, Ryan Parrott, was developing a series called Rogue Sun. And we all knew each other as friends and had that connection, but we also all worked on the Power Rangers books from Boom Studios at different points. So we all sort of had that background. And as we were working on these projects, we realized that they were quite distinct in some ways, but they also had a kind of similar ethos to them. And we had similar goals in trying to like really push the superhero medium forward. And at a certain point, we had this conversation about, might it be cool to have these characters exist in our own little shared universe? And we wanted that to be a different sort of construct to how it is at Marvel and DC, where there's like a lot of cross continuity and you sort of have to read multiple books to keep up. The most important thing for us was, if you just want to read, say, Inferno Girl Red, you just read book one, book two, book three, and you have to worry about anything else. Ditto for Radiant Black. But once a year, we do these big specials called Supermassive, which are like oversized one shots. They can be up to like 60 pages. And in those, our characters interact and there's a big one-off story and it reflects where those characters are at in the moment. And you can enjoy these characters coming together, but it's not essential reading for any of the main books. So you don't need to feel like any of those other books are sort of being derailed by these events. And it also allows us to do fun extra projects. Like we're working on a fighting card game featuring characters from across the Massiveverse where they'll all interact as well. So it's kind of our attempt to do the shared universe, but in a creator-owned way and with a slightly different approach. And in some ways that harkens back to the start of Image Comics where there were some attempts to do something like this and with various levels of success, but we're trying to sort of like formalize it and create a more standardized structure for it. So if people want those shared connections, they can enjoy them. But if they just want to enjoy individual stories, then we will happily facilitate that as well.
Okay. Now, people always get on me because I don't say this soon enough in their estimation. This project will only be funded if it reaches its goal by Thursday, September 21 at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And as we're talking, and we're doing this a little early, you're getting closer to your goal and you're making a lot of good progress. And you're over 500 backers, which is a good place to be. There's a lot of people who love to have 500 backers. So that's a good place to be. Now, let's talk a little bit about the first one, because I think the first one is important to build on.
Yeah.
How much did you want in the first one, and how much did you end up crowdfunding?
I actually can't remember off the top of my head, but I know we funded on our first day and ended up maybe doubling or tripling our goal, but we had a much lower goal that time, in part because we didn't fully understand just how involved it would be. We also ended up expanding the book, adding 20 pages to it, which added many, many costs. And we also found in the pandemic, the global shipping situation was a bit dire, so we had to switch printers. And, yeah, there was a bunch of costs that sort of spiraled out of control a little bit. So with this one, we wanted to make sure that we were covering fully all of our costs and no one was put into a dire situation because of it. So a bit more of an ambitious goal this time. But, as you said, we have been very fortunate to get a lot of great support thus far. We're hoping we'll make it to our goal. We're about halfway there, I think, at the moment. Fingers crossed, we'll cross the line.
The first one was 125 pages, and this one is being 120 pages. And so we want to make sure that you get are you going to have extra pages in the second one as well?
That's certainly possible. We actually didn't intend to have the extra pages in the first one, but as we were creating the story, specifically at the art stage, there were just a few places where Erica thought that she'd like to have a bit more space to spread her wings and expand the art a little bit. And because it's a creator-owned book, we could just decide to do that, even if it's a bit of an extra cost for us. So it's extremely possible that that will happen this time. The 120 pages is kind of a minimum for us. So you'll at least get that many story pages and, maybe some more.
Now, and the books that came out from Image, and there were three issues. They were $5.99 each, and they were like 60 pages, if I read it right. And I got to read them, and they're really interesting. So that's it's interesting that you're doing a larger volume. Because most people do, like, if you're lucky, a 20, 22-page thing, and to do a 60-page. That's quite a bit of reading to do. So was there a reason why you decided to go that way? Did it divide the story up at a good place for that?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. One of the reasons we went to Kickstarter in the first place with the first one was we didn't want to do a standard comic series. We wanted to do an original graphic novel that had the structure of a novel. Because I think that if you're writing properly for single issues, you have a beginning and a middle and an end every 20 pages. And you end up with a trade that has those sort of six discrete units of story. And I love writing for that format. But in this instance, we wanted to make something that felt more like a novel. So if there were new readers who were unfamiliar with superhero comics, they'd have a story structure that felt more familiar to them. So we took that to Kickstarter so we could fund that sort of very specific sort of model. And we weren't actually going to release it as anything other than a graphic novel through Image. But we realized at a certain point that the breaks, the act breaks, weren't exactly the same amount of pages, but they ended up being about 40 story pages each on average. And they worked as relatively satisfying units by themselves. So we thought we could release those. They would certainly be, as you said, not typical, but they would be close enough that we could sell them as single issues at retail. And I think that what that allowed is for us to spend more time with the characters and expand on some of the action beats and not feel like we have to sprint to a cliffhanger every 20 pages, you know? So it was been an interesting experiment, and people seem to be responding to it, which is great.
That's great. Now, one of the things I'm fascinated by, and as a longtime reader, I have read comics for decades, and I have read male characters as the leads for years and years and years. And the thing I haven't read are female lead characters. You know, male characters, I have a fair idea, 5 pages in, what's going to happen and who's going to do what to who. But when it gets to a female character, I am suddenly, I am out of my league, as it were. And so I have to pay much more attention and really, really, really read closely, because I'm just not sure what the female lead character is going to do. And I like that. That's something new for me. And of course, Inferno Go Red is the main character is a girl. And of course, the moment things start to happen, so I do not know what she's going to do. And I like that. I like not knowing. It's something, it's a challenge for me as a reader. Her name is Cassia Costa, I think is the name. And she's really, I enjoy, she's like I read somewhere, let me see if I can find it really quickly. There was a thing where it said about, it's something to do with like coming of age. In many ways, Inferno Go Red is an allegory for the modern teenage experience. Coming of age in a world with cataclysmic disaster looming, being told by older generations that it's up to them to solve the problems they didn't create. What does it take to succeed despite the pressure? And how can you find the radical belief needed to achieve the seemingly impossible without falling into dangerous self-delusion? Which I found really interesting. So talk about that, because, you know, honestly, comics do tend to deal with coming of age stories. But most of the time, like I said, it's mostly guys. And to see a girl coming of age, I think I haven't read that very often in comics. So I was very fascinated by doing that. Was there a specific reason why you decided to go this route?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I wanted to tell a story that would invite as many new readers into superhero comics as possible. I feel like that in media, there's a sort of superheroic renaissance, you know, like all of the movies that dominate the multiplexes are superhero films. But I think we're struggling a little bit to bring some of those people into the medium that started it all. And I think that there are a few different ways you can do that. One of them was what I was discussing before, with having a format that's more familiar to people who aren't normally in the comic space. And the other one is like diversity plays a huge role in that. If we can give like young or teenage girls in particular a hero that they relate to more, they're more likely to gravitate towards that. And I wanted to make sure that if we were going to do something about teenage girls, that it would be authentic to their experience now. It's not a generic coming of age story in the sense it could be set anytime, because it means different things to go through your teenage years in different eras. And we also wanted to make sure that we were reflecting female relationships really authentically, because at the heart of the book, really the most important two characters is Cassia Costa, Inferno Go Red, our lead, and also her mother, Anna, and how they relate to each other, because Anna becomes a really vital part of Cassia's world as a superhero. So we wanted to make sure that we're reflecting that as authentically as possible. And part of that was making sure that I had a co-creator who was female in Erica. And it took a long time to find the right artist, co-creator, partner. But I knew once I found Erica that I'd found exactly the right person, because she handles emotion so deftly. The action is so dynamic. but also she brings that female perspective. And I feel like that makes it feel more authentic. It's not just be trying to guess at what it means to be a young female person. We have a young female person on the team who can speak directly to that and make sure that we're bringing in the right amount of specificity and heart to make it feel authentic.
Well, that's good. How did you find her, by the way?
Oh, it was a literal years-long search. The reason, like, as I was saying before, Radiant Black and Vertigo Red came about at about, well, we started development about the same time, but Radiant Black was released much earlier because of how long it took me to find the right artist. And it ultimately came down to just asking all of the artists we knew if they had any recommendations. And we work with a lot of Italian artists, both in Power Rangers and through the Massiveverse. And we were asking Daniele Di Nicolo and Francesco Mano, who we work with. And a name that came up a few times was Erica's name. So we got in touch with her. And I knew straight away, once I sent her the story, or at least its sort of early outline form, how she responded, how excited, and the ideas that she's already, like, you know, bringing forth before she was even officially on the project, told me she was the right person. Because she clearly had a really energetic desire to contribute to this world and bring her a lot of herself to it, which is what I wanted. I wanted someone who wasn't just going to take my direction and roll stuff out. I wanted someone who would challenge my ideas, bring new ideas to the table, and could really collaborate with me on this character. And that's what I found in Erica.
Very good, very good. Because I'm always curious how people, you know, how writers in particular understand the subject matter they're doing. Like if a person of color is writing about a different diversity, or shall we say, I'm always curious how they get to understand that and stuff. So I think that Eric has probably given you a lot of good feedback and instruction. Absolutely. On how to keep it authentic and stuff. Now, the thing I'm curious about too is Cassia has two close friends, one Harriet and Lillian. And I'm always curious when creators do things. Where did these characters come from? Are they based on people you know? Are they developments of your imagination? Did you and Erica come up with them together? How did this all come to be?
Yeah, they're not really based on anyone that I know. I think it was just about knowing the journey that Cassie is going to go on and sort of having a decent idea of like what that'll be in the future as well. I had an understanding of the sort of support that Cassia would need as a character and also the ways in which she'd need to be challenged as a character. And then from that, I built out characters that would fulfill both of those things, who could guide Cassia in different ways at different moments, but also challenge her and sort of provide friction in different areas at different points. And once I had those archetypes in place, it was then a process of working with Erica to flesh them out. And I find that that's another really beneficial part of the process of working with Erica, is I can explain the sort of more like thematic, ideological points to her, and then she'll come back with these very specific designs. And there'll be a bunch of different designs for each character, but they'll all be very realizing their fashion choices and like their look and how they hold themselves and their expressions that help me really sort of solidify and understand what I'm looking for. And we'll go back and forth on that, choose a direction and then refine that. And once we have that, that helps me then understand that character better and changes how I write them. So it's a pretty organic back and forth process of just sort of like starting with broad objectives and knowing what role they need to play in the story, but then just chiseling away until you find something that feels specific and authentic and like a real person and not a gear in the structure of the story.
Mm-hmm. Very good, because the more realistic and relatable I think characters are, the better it is for the reader to understand. Now, I got a couple of questions, and I, as I said, I would like to know how things got the way they are. Apex City, which is where a lot of this takes place. Where is that located? Is it specifically not known, so it's up to our imaginations? Do you have an idea where it is? What's the story with Apex City?
Yeah, we actually haven't said where it is. And part of that is This isn't necessarily exactly our world. In fact, with the supermassive crossovers that I was talking about earlier within the Massiverse, we learned that Cassier actually exists in a different universe as compared to the other characters and sort of had to travel across universes. And there are differences between Cassier's Earth and the Massiverse Earth, which is probably a little closer to ours. And one of the reasons we did that is because we wanted Apex City to be a little unrealistic in the sense that it's a bit of a utopia. It's meant to represent what humanity can achieve if we have the best intentions and implement the best policies. And there's also some technology involved that just doesn't exist in our world. So it's kind of a little nebulously set a few steps into the future, but we didn't want to make it just the future of our world. It's not that sort of clean cut. It's more just that this is a world where humanity has progressed perhaps a little further in a little few specific ways and maybe just in this one place. So, yeah, Apex City is kind of it's its own little pocket, especially once it gets ripped out of that universe and sort of cast into darkness. It is its own entity floating alone, representing sort of the best of humanity, but threatening to be crushed from all sides by the darkness that surrounds it.
So the Massiverse is kind of a massive multiverse?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. So I was curious about that because, you know, it's funny how these days everybody wants everything. Because as I remember when I watched the CW, for example, Supergirl's National City was on a different universe than Arrow and Flash were and all this. And they were all different universes altogether and stuff. So I guess that makes it a little easier because then you're not restricted to make everything all bump into each other. They don't bump into each other very often. So it's a good thing.
Yeah, I think more than that, it was just that we didn't want the story choices that I make with Inferno Girl Red to restrict the others. For example, like with the advanced technology that exists in Apex City, like they have sort of holographic phones and that sort of thing. The natural question that arises is why don't people in Radiant Black have holographic phones if it's available in Apex City just over there? So in some ways it was kind of simpler to separate them that way and just have them be able to, you know, travel across universes when needed, which you're right, is how they handled it on the CW. I think up until Crisis on Infinite Earths when they merged those worlds together and they all sort of existed on the same one.
Yeah, that's good. Now, as I always like to say, I'm interested in how things are. How did it get called Inferno Girl Red? Because there's Radiant Black and there's Radiant Red. And I'm just sort of curious, why is she called Inferno Girl Red?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. That was one of the earliest parts of the project that just kind of came to me with the idea. I think part of it is there is a bit of that influence from Tokusatsu and, you know, series like Super Sentai and Kamen Rider, where the grammar of it is a little unusual and a little jarring in the sense that it sort of like snaps you to attention a little bit. And I think the Inferno part of it was we wanted to cultivate the sense of Cassia representing a light of hope in the dark. And that when that light burns brightest, it's raging and unstoppable and Inferno-like, I suppose. And then the red aspect, I think, is definitely very specifically tied to the Power Rangers / Super Sentai sort of, you know, history that we're drawing on, where these characters have these bold colors that are so tied in and associated with them that makes them so iconic.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the first book, in book one, Cassia and her mother come to Apex City looking for a fresh start. And said they find a challenge, it says in here, they could never have imagined, and Cassia had to find her way past her own hard-earned cynicism to find the self-belief that would allow her to become a hero, which I find interesting and stuff. Now, not to spoil anything, but let's just say that she endures a big loss at the end mm-hmm. of the first book. And the second one, she's got a let's just say she's branching out on her own, seems like. And she's having to learn how to do things more on her own, which I think is kind of interesting with that. Now, I'm kind of curious because it talks about in here that she gets a new mentor, and in the illustration that's on there, you see her kind of looking to our right, and there's a guy looking to the left. Is that the new mentor? It's Thomas is identified the person as. Is that the new mentor?
No, that's not actually the new mentor. That's actually going to be Thomas is a complication in Cassie's life. If you've for those of people who have read Inferno Girl, read book one, Thomas is in that a little bit as another student at her school who is a little bit of an outsider and keeps his distance from everybody, but started to build a bit of a connection with Cassia. But then something happens at the end of book one that is going to set Thomas on a very different path into book two and put him on a sort of crossover with Cassia in book two. The mentor in book two, I don't want to say too specifically in case anyone hasn't read book one, because we have that as part of the Kickstarter campaign as well. But it is someone who Cassia discovered the true nature of towards the end of book one and discovered that this person perhaps has a lot more in common with Cassia than she thought. Actually, I think I could say specifically, this person used to be an Inferno Girl herself in the past. This person used to wield the bracelet that Cassia now uses, so has a lot of experiences with that, but also made a lot of mistakes and is going to be able to guide Cassia in some ways, but also has to be very wary of not pushing Cassia down the roads of failure that she herself walked down.
Of course, you know, as somebody who likes to know how things got the way they are, do you have an idea how many Inferno Girl Reds there have been?
Yes, in the sense that there have been an untold amount throughout all of time and also all across the multiverse. So there's one bracelet, but it sort of bounces around where it's needed, where sort of the darkness threatens to sort of topple things most extremely. So we've actually had another Inferno Girl Red appear in one of our supermassive crossovers back in medieval times. So it stretches back perhaps to the start of the universe. We're not even quite sure at this stage, or at least we haven't revealed at this stage. So there's many, 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 many predecessors to Cassia, and as she makes a closer connection to the bracelet, she's going to find ways to connect in some ways to her predecessors, even those who have passed.
Okay. So as we go along, we'll find out. Now, of course, book two is obviously that's a good question. How far are you guys into book two? Are there three same number of pages as the first time, roughly? And if it goes to Image, it's going to be three issues like it was in the first one?
We expect so, yeah. I have written it. And I think at this stage, it looks like it's going to be able to break into three chunks. Again, the pages will probably be 40 pages on average, but some might be smaller, some might be bigger. But I expect that'll be the case, yeah. And Erica is, we've got five completed pages that we have up on the Kickstarter campaign page. And Erica's maybe another 5 or 10 pages in after that. But yeah, it'll be another 9 months or so before Erica, Igor, and Becca are completely finished with all 120 pages or however many there are once we're finished, and we're ready to ship it out to people.
So early next year?
Probably late next year.
Late next year, okay. So it's always good because comic book people are very understanding if you tell them ahead of time.
Absolutely.
If you don't say anything, well, it'll come out whenever it's ready. People will kind of sit around because there's always the what I call the Janet Jackson principle. What have you done for me lately? If people don't hear anything for a long time, they turn their attention to other properties and stuff like that. So you don't want that to happen. You want to keep people apprised of what's going on.
That's one of the things I love about Kickstarter too, is we can have those conversations with people and keep people updated every few weeks about how things are progressing, and they can get little glimpses at how the art is coming along. It brings people into the process. And even when there are delays, like in our last campaign, Erica ended up hospitalized, and she couldn't even hold a fork for a little while because she hurt her drawing arm. But because we're able to communicate very clearly with people, and we've been showing people progress all the way up until that point, people were so understanding and supportive, and all of the messages we got were saying, like, don't worry, it's okay. We don't mind a bit of a delay. Take care of yourself, and we're excited for you to get back to the project when you're healthy. So that communication is so important.
There have been Kickstarters that I have backed, and I have never heard anything. In fact, I just got in the mail a week ago a Kickstarter that I had backed like 5 years ago. And
oh my gosh.
It just came in. Of course, I just got an email today saying, the guy said, well, that's the end. I was going to do more, but I think that's enough for me. And I was like, well, you know, better to say that and get, because I love the book. I really enjoyed what it was doing. I saw him at a convention, the creator, and I supported it. And I just got the book in the mail, like I said, a little while ago. And I was like, oh, wow. I wonder if I'd ever see this book. But the thing is, be forward and tell people what's going on.
You gotta, yeah.
If they don't do that, I'm telling you, everybody. I know one Kickstarter person who I donated money to, and then I found out that he had taken the money to pay his personal bills. And I was like, well, that's nice. You know, I'm glad for that, but that doesn't help me very much. And I don't see him doing any other Kickstarters, at least not under his name anyway. Maybe he's doing another name, but I'm just kind of like, ugh. This is why with Kickstarters, I'm extremely nervous anymore. I kind of look at it and go, I'm not sure what's going to happen. But with yours, particularly given the success of the first one, I think people can be very confident backing this one, because you've already proven that you can do it. And I think that's a very important thing.
Yeah, that thankfully does help a lot. Is now that we have, you know, people have the hardcovers in their hands from last time, and you know, they've been responding so positively about the quality of the hardcover and how everything turned out. So hopefully that does instill some confidence. Yeah, that we know what we're doing, we can do it, we have a track record, and you can trust us that we're going to deliver.
That'll be great. Because now I want to talk about a couple of levels. I'm always interested in levels of some of the Kickstarters. There's one that's for you to be drawn into Infernal Girl Red Book 2. Now, this is kind of a pricey level. Yeah. It's $1,500, which is a have you gotten anybody to take that up yet? Or?
Yeah, we've got we only had 5 of those, and we've had 3 taken already.
Wow, good for you. That's great. Yeah. The only time I ever did that, there was a guy, it was a zombie Moby Dick. And to get drawn into the book, you only had to pay $80, which I had at that time, so I put it in there, and I got drawn in. Now, the thing was, I didn't know, because I was going to be a zombie guy on the ship that was chasing the zombie Moby Dick. And so when they drew me in there, they took my glasses off because they didn't think anybody from that era would be wearing glasses. And I couldn't find myself. And I finally had to write the guy and say, where am I? And he pointed out in the page, and I said, oh, I get it. No glasses. Okay, now I see myself. But for $80, you know, that fulfilled a dream of mine to be able to get in there. And not everybody can afford to do it at $80.
Totally, yeah.
I jumped on that with both feet because I desperately wanted to get drawn into a comic. It's once in my life, at least. So I got that done. But this is a much, let's just say this is a high octane book to do it. And if you can do it, and you've already got 3 people to do it. Wow, that is impressive.
We're very fortunate. Yeah. Yeah.
That is terrific. So I hopefully get the other 2 and go and get those in there. Now, another one I want to talk about, there's the $2,500 level, which is design an Inferno Girl Red.
Yes.
It says here she's just the latest in the long line of Inferno Girl Reds. And this is your chance to help design one of her predecessors. So you get to work with Erica to design one of the Inferno Girl Reds. And you tell her your ideas, send some references, and have a video call working session with her, and go through a round or two of notes and redesigns. Are you involved in that? Is that pretty much Erica?
That's all Erica. I'll pitch in if Erica, you know, feels like she needs some advice or anything. But yep, that'll just be Erica and whoever takes that reward tier. And I think what we really like about that one is that this Inferno Girl Red predecessor of Cassie's that's created will be an official part of the Inferno Girl Red canon, and that character will actually appear in Inferno Girl Red Book 2 in a sequence. So they will be confirmed as part of that legacy in the book, and then the person who gets that raw tier will also get a sketch of that character by Erica. So that creation that you help sort of develop will be all yours, and you'll have the only sketch of them that exists, and they'll be in the book, so you can tell everyone that you were part of the creative process of creating one of Cassie's predecessors.
That sounds like so much fun. How many of those are available?
Just the one of that one. That's a very exclusive one. Yeah.
Hopefully that somebody will jump up and get onto that right away, because I think that's if it hasn't gone already by the time this posts, I really hope that somebody will take advantage of that. Because boy, imagine having your own creation in a comic like that. That'd be so much fun to do.
Be cool, right?
Oh gosh, as a comic book nerd my whole life and stuff like that, it's so much fun. I have to tell you a quick story. I am an editor of an indie comic called Stabity Bunny. Mm-hmm. And the creator is a roommate of mine. And we went through I've been editing, you know, he didn't tell me the story. He just would give me a page at a time so I could react to it. It's several issues in. There's 12 issues. The first arc is out. Actually, it's 13 issues. And the thing I got a kick out of, there was one of the illustrations people thought, that was me in there. And it wasn't me. It was somebody else in there. And it kept saying, oh, there you are. You're on page such and such. I said, no, sorry, that's not me. Oh, yes, it is. That's obviously you. I said, no, I'm sorry. I can definitely tell you that's not me. And so I get a kick out of the fact that everybody says, well, when are you going to be in there? And I thought, I don't know if I'm ever going to be in there, because I have this thing that editors like myself, we're like Batman. We prefer the shadows. So I don't ever expect to see, if I'm in there, I'll be shocked, but I'm much more interested in where do the commas go and did you spell everything right and stuff like that. So I never worried about my face being in there. So it's just kind of fun my job is to make other people look good as an editor. And I'm sure if you talk to Kyle would probably say something similar to it. I think all the good editors, I knew one editor, she wanted her name at the top of the credits. And I said, why? Well, I was the one that did the last editing. Yeah, you should be at the bottom of the credits. You shouldn't be at the top. Editors, we're not supposed to be, our faces and stuff shouldn't be in the comics unless it's a thing where a whole bunch of people get in there and we're just one of them, in my opinion. So anyway, but I just get a kick out of that. So the second story, basically, you've got together. Do you have an idea how many of these you'd like to do?
Yeah, I have a broad plan. I would love to be able to do somewhere in the neighborhood of six overall. But I also am a big believer in giving yourself the flexibility and space to discover stories as you go and chase down ideas and sort of like character threads that you encounter along the way. So it's far, far, far from a firm sort of lockdown plan. But yeah, there's a broad idea of how many we'd like to do if we are fortunate enough to get that far.
Okay, that sounds great. Well, I think things are looking pretty good for that. Now, my understanding is I was looking through this. You guys have a website. If anybody has some information they'd like to get, what's the website address?
That's infernogored.com. At the moment, that's redirecting straight to our Kickstarter page, which is probably the best place to go anyway. But after the Kickstarter campaign, that will revert to a general website where you can find out more about Inferno Girl Red and where to get books at retail and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about social media for you and Inferno Girl Red? Why don't we start with what's your social media where people can find you, and then how do people follow Inferno Girl Red?
Yep. I'm at Matthew Groom on Twitter. So that's Matthew with one T and G-R-O-O-M for Groom, or one word. And for Inferno Girl Red, thankfully, it's nice and easy. It's just at Inferno Girl Red on Twitter.
Twitter is now in X.
It is X. I keep forgetting. Yes, thank you.
Yeah, and we're all kind of going like, what are we? Because when people say X, people don't know what you're talking about. Because usually X is just a nondescript thing.
Absolutely. It's frustrating.
It's all silly stuff. This whole thing is kind of funny stuff. You obviously, you've worked on Ultraman for Marvel, and you worked on Power Rangers for Boom as well.
That's right. Yeah, I did 6 issues on a Power Rangers series called Mighty Morphin that they had.
Okay, and you also wrote for DC, a thing called Crimes of Passion Anthology.
Yeah, that was just a short story that I did starring Slam Bradley, the titular detective of Detective Comics, who predated even Batman.
Mm-hmm. Now, are there other projects you're working on that we should be aware of, or is Inferno Girl Red keeping you busy?
There are other things. There's not a lot I can talk about right now, unfortunately.
Okay.
I do have recently come out a story in the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers 30th Anniversary Anthology Special from Boom Studios. But everything else is secret for the moment. But there is a very, very big one coming next year in the creator-owned space alongside Inferno Girl Red that can't wait to start telling people about. So, yeah, keep an eye out for that one.
So if we follow you on social media, we're likely to be sure to hear about that.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, very good, very good. Well, it all sounds like great fun. I read the first series and I really enjoyed it. Like I said, female lead characters baffle me, and so it's a wonderful thing to be able to read those and actually not have any idea where it's going to go. So I love that kind of thing, and I think this is going to be great. I love the preview pages. And by the way, let's once again say that if you go to Kickstarter and you look up Inferno Girl Red Book 1 and Book 2, I think that'll get you to the right place, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, or you can just, if you enter InfernoGirlRed.com into your URL bar, that'll redirect you right to the Kickstarter.
That's true. That's a good thing for that. So that's good stuff, Matt. I'm really looking forward to it. I think you're going to have a nice long story. I'd like to see this be an animated show. If I have my druthers.
That'd be very cool. I would love it.
It just screams animated show to me, especially with a girl in charge. You don't get many of those. Yeah. Although they just did Invincible. They just did Atomic Eve as a special.
Yeah. Well, look, see, the ground is broken. The world is ready. So let's put that out into the universe.
I'd like to see that because I really do think that it's definitely worth doing and worth having. And I want to see more female lead characters in these in this kind of superheroic stuff, because Wonder Woman and Storm are not enough for me. I want to see other ones.
Absolutely.
All the good stuff. So it'll be good. So, Matt, just keep up the wonderful stuff. We'll keep our eye. And let's see, one last time, I want to make sure people know, you want to be sure to back the project long before Thursday, September 21 at 11:59 p.m. EDT, Eastern Daylight Time. And I'm sure we don't want Matt to do the old refresh thing that people do on Kickstarter. Oh, no, nobody's going to back my project anymore because they haven't. Oh, well, as I'm looking at it, just went up again. So that's a good sign.
That's good.
We're recording this ahead of time, so it's not going to be live when this post. But if it's going up now, that's a good sign. It's getting there. Every move gets you closer and closer to that goal. One last thing. Do you have stretch goals in mind?
We have some stretch goals in mind. We'll bust those out if we need them. But, yeah, okay. Hopefully we will.
That's good. That'll be good. How many backers backed the first one?
I think it was around 1,500. I'd have to double check that.
Okay. Well, we got about 1,000 more to go here then.
Yeah.
And all you guys who were in there the last time, let's get on board and get this to get jumping here, because we want to make sure we get all this again. And if you back the first one, I think you're going to really enjoy the second one as well. I just have a feeling you're really going to love it because it's a great story. And boy, we need more female lead characters. If there's anything in this world that we need, it's more of that. So I think that's going to be great. So really good stuff. Again, it's Inferno Girl Red, and it's called Inferno Girl Red Books 1 and 2 by Matt Groom and Erica Durso. And be sure to back it as soon as you can, because we want to get more of these good things. So keep up the wonderful stuff, Matt, and good luck with this Kickstarter. I'm sure it'll be a big success.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Wayne, and thanks so much for having me.
need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for this week. Be back next time. We'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.